Mané, Sandy.
This is Talkin' Audio.
Episode 1300 of the Talkin' Audio podcast was hoping the modern day Leafs would give me a little something more to be excited about here today. So we go back a little ways to a 13 who never let anybody down coming in to this edition of the show. 1300 episodes of the Talkin' Audio podcast, more than a few of them late night on a night like this after the Leafs have let me down, after the Blue Jays have let me down, often on the same night. And yet here we are for the 1300th time. That's a dangerous indicator right there where we are in this evening. The fact that I'm already tripping over my tongue. Happy to be welcoming back to the show, Scott MacArthur. What's happening, man?
Well, I have been in Ontario since I joined you in Versailles pretty much a month ago. So I'm driving because I'm staying with my parents right now.
I'm in no condition to drive, Scotty.
Yeah, you're in no condition to drive. You just watched the Maple Leafs, and as one is wont to do, and as one is almost required to do to get through the experience, you are, as they say, a little tuned up. So, I am so as to not wake my early to bed parents. I have jumped in the car, and I'm rolling around downtown Oakville and different parts of Oakville as we have this conversation.
Right. Well,
come on a tour with me, Matthew.
Well, that's it. What can we drive by? Is it the Kingdom? That was in Burlington, right? I'm thinking about live to air on Edge 102 back in the day. I guess the
I mean we're going way back. I don't think it's quite the same thing, but I just drove past the Oakville Center for the Performing Arts.
Sure, yeah, you know. No doubt they had some bangers in there at some point.
You know, because Oakville was always just the destination for the crazies.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it's true.
You know.
We referenced there, I did off the top, that, you know, I've done numerous editions of these 1300 shows, post-game Leaf playoff games, post-game Blue Jays playoff games, and tonight, you know, the Jays, it wasn't a playoff game. It was just as unsatisfying, though. We'll get to them in just a minute. But, you know, we're three games into Leafs-Bruins now. I thought, for the most part, everybody's gotten what they've deserved in this series. I thought game one, Boston was the better team. I didn't think Toronto was awful, but I didn't think they were good. In game two, I thought Toronto was better. And deserve to come away with the win in that one. And in game three, look, there's going to be a lot of people upset about officiating. There's going to be a lot of people upset about different things that were and weren't called and moments throughout that game. But I looked at game three and I saw an infinitely beatable Boston team. They don't have a ton of high-end talent. I was saying that to myself, kind of watching kind of midway through the second when nothing was happening, when it was all bogged down. And I just said, Toronto's got to win this game. They're just a, you know, there's more finish in this lineup, and that's not at all what happened. Scotty, we come through the third period, a couple opportunistic goals there for the Bruins, and they skate away with a well-earned victory.
Yeah, so let's just set the table for full honesty here. And I think I've mentioned this to you on previous episodes you've had me on.
Yeah.
I am coming at this, and I'm calling you Matthew tonight. I'm gonna be more formal because we're unhappy.
We're unhappy. Scotty, yeah.
But I am coming at this from like 30,000 feet.
Right.
Okay. So as I've been forthright with
it's roughly
you,
how far Marner is from the contact in the corners.
Well, and we can get into that. and we intend to. And now I'm using the royal we to describe you and me and. And sometimes I use we to describe me when I get mad. So,
sure.
So I haven't watched hockey this year, okay? And I really haven't watched a lot of hockey in the last 2.5 or 3 years. And this is not the podcast to get into why. We've done a little bit of that before, and
sure,
maybe it's for a podcast down the road. Nobody cares.
Yeah. Well.
So I have watched the playoff series, not because I'm a full-throated, screaming at my television Leafs fan like I have been for most of my life, mm-hmm. but because it's the playoffs and
he's
I want to see them
town.
Do well. Yeah, I want to see them do well,
yeah.
But I take, if they go on and win the Stanley Cup, Matt, I'm not your guest, because I can't claim ownership for this season. I can't claim investment. I don't have a right.
Scotty, but if they go on and win the Stanley Cup, I will have long since dissolved into a puddle of sweat and Bacardi. There will be no guest. There will be
correct.
No show.
Correct. And can I add that if either of these two teams, given how they've been playing, win the Stanley Cup, I will dissolve into whatever it is I'm composed of
right.
these days. Because I'm not seeing either. I'm looking at the Carolina Hurricanes going,
yep.
I don't see how this works against them from right. either of these teams.
That's fair.
That's it. So I'm coming at it from 30,000 feet. So if that immediately in you, the listeners' ears and eyes, disqualifies me as someone worthy of comment, then listen long enough so that Matt gets like a metric for it or whatever the hell it is, and then tune me out. But I would argue that I'm coming at it with fresh eyes mm-hmm. as someone who's watched the game a long time, as someone who covered the game both in Ottawa and Toronto for the better part of a decade. And so I'm coming in kind of fresh.
Sure.
And what I see after that long preamble, Matt, and you've never heard me give you one of those before, is nothing's changed.
Hmm.
Nothing has changed with the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're just the exact same group that struggles against teams that clog the neutral zone. I see a lot of standing around. I see a lot of cycling back into their own end to try to recreate the breakout on a second or third opportunity. I see a lot of fumbled passes, some kind of tape to tape from relatively short distances. I see Mitch Marner, who is unquestionably an elite hockey player, mm-hmm. unable to, and I almost don't blame him for this because it's got nothing to do with effort. It's just, I don't think he's physically capable of the playoff style of game when it's tight quarters and it's body on body in the corner, or sometimes a body, yours, on two bodies in the corner, got to fight for pucks. I mean, obviously, brilliant assist on the Leafs' game-opening goal,
yeah,
but outside
goal.
Of that...
It was a great pass, yeah.
Yeah, outside of that, I don't see much there. You know, I thought in Game 3, which is what we're talking about, just ended a half hour, 45 minutes ago, mm-hmm. as we talk, I thought Marchand was better than Matthews. Now, again, you could say Matthews was better than Marchand in Game 2, mm-hmm. so that's going to have to reverse again.
Yep.
And I see a hockey team, and this is probably bias more than it is data-driven. I just hold my sphincter tight for that first shift after the Maple Leafs score a goal.
Right.
And it bit them in the ass. 2-2 became 3-2 very quickly. They just... Sometimes there's just these weird odd man rushes off of bad pinching decisions and different. I don't know what it is. Like, they got the same group of stars and they change everybody around the stars every year. And there's just, and it goes back to the Pat Quinn days as well, Matt, where, you know, you used to watch Aki Berg and Jurke Lume. You know, they became the two ultimate firefighters because they were the arsonists. You know, they learned to put out their own fires all the time. And yeah. it's just, you know, it's like, goodness gracious, boys. Like, the more things change and the more the people change, the more things stay the same. I don't know how you feel. You know, I thought Boston was going to win the series at the start. Obviously, 2-1, regaining home ice advantage. They're in the driver's seat to do it. Game four is hugely pivotal for the Maple Leafs, needless to say. But I do think this series is going to go deep. But I don't know what people see other than the glitz and the glamour and the sizzle of the regular season.
Scotty, when I look back at it, I see kind of what you're talking about all encompassed into one game. I'm not great at answering messages. I'm not great at talking to people during these games, but I am scanning my Twitter and I'm seeing all these people at the end of the first period going, I don't know how this series is going to go, but I love this Brad Treliving version of the team way better than the Kyle Dubas version of the team. And I'm like, it's not that different. Dubas the last couple years was going out and he was bringing in all, you know, stay at home, grind defensemen, things that took you away from the skill a little bit. And it was because after the first period, there had been 60 combined hits, right? There was a ton of physicality. But the problem has been for the last several years is this team can't score. And the biggest reason is that you have a D out there that cannot get the puck up to your guys. And Joel Edmondson can't get the puck up to your guys, right?
Nope.
Simon Benoit can't get the puck up to your guys. Jake McCabe, a little better. That's not really his game either. Ilya Labushkin, certainly not. And so that was all fine and dandy when it was scoreless and we were hitting everything in sight at the end of the first. Everybody's like, see, look, this is how you got to play. And then when you lose and you only score two goals again, which has been kind of the number now for the last 2 years of the playoffs, is the Leafs only able to score two goals in these games. There's a reason for that. And look, yeah, Matthews has to be a bit better. Marner has to be a lot better. Who knows when you're getting Willie back? That's a huge part of the story so far. But those guys aren't going to create the way you want them to create if no one can get them the puck. And so for the first half of the game, while you're winning or you're tied and it's you're, you know, hitting everything that moves, it all looks great. But when you lose and you don't score, everyone suddenly circles back and goes, oh, see, this sucks, and oh, we're dead, and all. Well, it's the same team. It's just a little more big picture. You got to look at the way this is going to go, and I don't know about Marner. I don't know what's happening there. Like you said, great pass on the Nyes goal, but I don't know if he's still hurt. His numbers, I'm not willing to just give him the benefit of the doubt that he's injured, because we've seen this before from him in the playoffs that this is sort of when he starts to shrink away a little bit. There is something to the injury. I'm not necessarily going to take that all away from him, but there's more to it than that. And this group, I don't know. And like I said to you kind of off the top as we were setting the table here, this Boston team looks infinitely beatable. And maybe the scariest part is that Pasternak has not broken out yet, and he's going to. He is not someone you're going to hold down for 6 or 7 games. Certainly this version of the team isn't. The Leafs' penalty kill isn't all that good. The power play isn't all that good. And at some point, Pasternak's going to burn you, and you needed to take advantage of these games where he hasn't yet.
Yeah, I mean, so they have that power play at the end of the second period, and then, you know, Tyler Bertuzzi takes that idiotic penalty.
Well, after everything they had just let go, that was a little ticky-tack too, right?
Like, okay, so that you're referring to
the Trent Frederick
the three
goal.
Three or four penalties they didn't call.
That's right. That leads to the Trent Frederick goal. And that's
right,
fine. Like, I'm not one of these things. I'm not saying the refs are out to get Toronto. I think NHL officiating is generally bad, but I think generally they're told to be bad. Like, this is what they want to let go in the playoffs, and so they do. And so it's only frustrating in the sense that really after those two or three non-calls, you're going to give Bertuzzi something on that. That was a little weak.
Yeah. Well, and they're always looking for the even up.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
I can't remember the player, but I thought Boston could have had a penalty called against them in their own end when the Leafs were leading 1-0. And I turned to my dad and I said, if it was 1-0 Boston, the Leafs would be on the power play right now.
Yep.
And it's like, so a lot of it's situational. You know, the thing with Marner, the high ankle sprain, I mean, that...
It's tough.
You know, yeah, and I don't want to... I'm not here to be Al Bundy and relive my high school days, but I had a high ankle sprain in the Halton Regional Championship rugby game in grade 11, and it took me all summer. Now, I'm not sleeping in hyperbaric chambers and all that like professional athletes are, but it took me all summer to get over that, and I was wearing a brace on my ankle all fall while I played football
right. The
next school year. So that's serious stuff. But, you know, so whatever that is what it is. But again, like, the assist on the goal doesn't negate the general ineffectiveness
yep. The
remainder of the night.
That's right.
Ilya Samsonov made three brilliant saves mm-hmm. in the first period. You know what negates all of that? The Patrick Laleem impersonation on the Frederick goal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, what's happening there? How does that go in? And so when people talk about, and again, I remind you, it's not like I've been watching a whole lot. I know Samsonov had a few weeks break there around the holiday season to kind of get his mind right.
Yep.
But when people talk about goaltending possibly being what does the Leafs in, it's that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That puck just cannot go in the net. You are on home ice. Ryan Reeves was just throwing his body around, having one of the most effective shifts
of his time in Toronto. In that neutral zone, a couple of big hits, nailing Pavel Zacha. Like, it's all going pretty good until it's not.
The place is going batshit crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It's a corporatist crowd. It's Scotiabank Arena. I know it's louder in the playoffs, but sure. It's still typically quiet. The place is unglued, and you take a big dump in your crease after having a huge night up until that point.
Yeah.
It's just so unbelievably disheartening. And I looked at it. It reminded me of the Nieuwendyk goals on Laleem in game 7 of the, help me with the
04.
Year. Was it 04?
Yeah.
The 04 play. Yeah. The last time the Leafs were in the playoffs in that era.
Yeah.
You know, and it has an effect. You've got to.
Well, he's going to skate on
shots.
That a little bit, I bet, right? Because we'll all be talking tomorrow about all the things that weren't called on that play, and so I bet you this gets overlooked for him a little bit. But you're right; that's an unforgivable goal. Like, that cannot go in.
Look, you got to stop the puck.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
All of those things that weren't called on that in that 30 to 45 second sequence, Nobody remembers tomorrow if a goal isn't scored.
Right. No,
and
you're right about that.
If it's a 3-on-2, you know, roof daddy to end the rush, and it's a gorgeous thing, maybe we're spitting nails.
Yeah.
But that's a blocker save that lands on the ice right in front of you. There's no rebound, and you just smother it, and there's a face-off.
Right.
And nobody's any the wiser. You got to stop the puck. I mean, you know, it's. I feel badly, you know, for you, and we're talking like the series is over. I don't believe it is. Like I said, I think Boston will end up winning the series,
yep. But
I don't believe this series is over.
Right.
And because I don't believe the series is over, it also gives me plenty of opportunity, and I hope that I am, to be wrong on my prediction. But you can't have that. You just, you know, well, they're humans. Yes, they're humans. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is human. But 100 times out of 100, a first baseman makes the catch on a routine throw from third base. If I saw that air 6 times a year, every year by different first basemen, I'd go, well, there's one of the 6.
Right.
I never see it. You know, now you see some of those types of goals more often.
Yeah.
And so I guess we've got to shrug in that regard, but it can't happen at this time of year when you're trying to beat a team that is better than you based on record,
mm-hmm.
that is arguably better than you when it comes to the roster.
Sure.
And that is deeply in your head because of the last 12 years of experience with them.
Well, so let me ask you one more thing on this. You mentioned Vladdy. We'll move to the Jays here in a minute. But let me ask you one more thing on this Leafs team. Do you disagree with me? And this is one of the unique opportunities having someone like you on here who knows the game but who hasn't been following this team as closely as others over the last year or two. When you look at this series, do you see it differently than me in that right now this Boston team looks pretty beatable? Like that, yeah, they finished ahead of you in the standings, but outside of Pastrnak, like even Brad Marchand, who had a great game in Game 3, he only finished with 29 goals this year. Like, I look at that team and go, you know what? If you're playing well and if you're healthy, this Leafs team should beat them. Are you seeing that when you watch the way this is going, or is that just me being, yeah, you know, blue goggles?
No, I mean, and I thought they were dreadful, the Leafs, in Game 1.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
like dreadful. And it isn't, and I watch all these post game comments. And we gotta stay out of the box, eh?
It's a good idea.
And I'm like, I don't know, maybe complete a 10-foot pass on a breakout,
right?
And I'm not talking about the passer. I'm talking about the receiver of the pass. You know, not fumbling it six times. And I'm turning to people saying, is the ice in Boston bad? Or is this just because I'm not seeing the Bruins do this?
Right.
You know, or these magical 3-on-2s the other way, the burying of point shots and guys' crotches, and it just drops in front of them and they're back the other way. You know, I'm like, I'm having flashbacks. And I know there's articles out there. My buddy Jonas Siegel wrote one. You know, they got to put Marner back with Matthews. Well, let's have a conversation about a guy making $10.9 million a year who apparently isn't capable of driving, yeah, of being the driver of his own line.
Especially especially with Willie out. No, can't do,
yeah,
it. Sorry, man. Mitch, you got to do this, man. We need you, yeah, right now to carry another line, right? Like,
and I know this is sacrilegious, Matt, but I wasn't exactly a big fan of his dad's.
No.
I'm watching
Mitch
Matthews.
Or Willie's?
I'm neither.
Okay.
I'm watching Austin play with Max Domi.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, sacrilegious, I'm sorry, you know, pray for me in church on Sunday morning because clearly I'm going to hell because a guy with Domi on his back is bugging me again, just like the last one. And then the other guy whose uncle is a complete fucking moron. 59 there. Tyler Bertuzzi.
Yeah.
I'm watching Matthews skate around with these two, and it's like watching Sundin with Hoagland and Renberg and
Freddie Modine.
All of these guys. But like, what? And how come? This is your fault. You got me going now, and I'm sitting here telling you I don't care. How come the power play? This is new to me, Matt. You teach me the sport now. How come the power play goes through Tyler Bertuzzi?
Well, the power...
How come the puck is always destined for Tyler Bertuzzi to get the shot? What the hell's going on? There's Tavares. There's Marner. I know he's not a... You know, he's not going to break the twine, but...
Yeah.
But there's Matthews. Like, I just
think without Willie as that secondary shooter, they're not afraid of anyone else on that power play, so they're going to stand on Matthews, right? They're going to cover up Matthews.
Yeah.
They can lean on him. When you get Willie back on that number one power play, there's a secondary shooting threat. And Marner isn't that. Morgan Riley isn't that. You know, Tavares down low, tipping stuff is pretty good, but as a secondary shooting threat, he's not quite the same. It's a problem, man. And the power play's been a problem for a lot of the year. The penalty kill's been a problem for a lot of the year. You can't have both of those not working and win a series. You just can't.
You're bang on. And the playoffs, the style of game changed from the 1970s to the 1990s and from the 1990s to the late 2000s and from the late 2000s to now. The style and the way the game is played has changed.
Yeah.
And to me, in a lot of ways, the evolution has been good. But there are truths about the sport, like any sport, that don't change. If you don't get routine saves, I don't care how well you've played up to that point as a goaltender. if you can't make a routine save in a key moment, and as a team, if your special teams are helpless, you're giving up goals on the PK and you're not scoring goals on the power play, it ain't, you're not getting to four before your opponent does.
Right.
You're so, just not.
No. So as we sit here now, you know, a little frustrated, a little fed up. The series isn't over. It's 2-1. We'll see what happens. Leafs could come out game four and do what they did in game two, and we'll see where this goes. But we should move things along to the Blue Jays here a little bit. I do want to
mention... just a second, man. I could have declined this,
yeah,
and I wouldn't have the heart rate I have right now. So this is on you. This is on you.
Well, I'm glad to have dragged you down into the mud here with me.
I need one of those peanut butter,
yeah,
pina colada...
stouts or something, one of the lever,
kale and spinach stout aftertaste deals that Lee finds at some brewery in Minden.
God love Minden, man. It's a good country.
Minden's not bad.
No, Minden's, yeah, all right. So
they got a good food land there.
Yeah, okay. So for those who were a little curious off the top of the show, we didn't talk any craft beer. Scotty's out driving, and I've been into the heavier stuff during a Leaf game. I will say I do have something sitting in front of me because I'm slumming it a little tonight. I'm hating my teams. I'm hating myself. And so I'm going down to something that I used to take out of the old man's fridge when I was watching games back at his house. I got a Molson Canadian sitting right here in front of me. That's kind of back to the old days, right? Takes me home a little bit. So we'll get to that. I should mention our friends, good friends of the show, AJ Jakubek and Graham Creech, having me on the drive on TSN 1200 on Thursday afternoon. If you're someone who listens to this show and listens to their station, I know there's a lot of crossover there. Looking forward to being on with them. Follow along on social media at TallCanAudio when we have the exact time. I'll let you know. But we'll talk a little bit TCA episode 1300, and then I have a feeling they'll want to hit me with a lot of Leaf stuff. That'll be fun. They'll be kind. I'm quite certain.
Say hi to both of them for me, yeah, longtime friends.
Yeah.
And Creature was Mike Eastwood's and my on-site producer for our post-game show for home games down at what was then Scotiabank Arena, now, of course, Canadian Tire Center, back in the late 2000s. So
right.
Creature was like breaking into the business.
Just so a young lad.
I'm so thrilled for him where he is now. So please say hi to both of them.
Well, that was going to be the question I wanted to ask you was, you know, as we're doing this kind of post Leafs game, post Jays game, you know, you were down in Toronto there. You were hosting afternoon shows. You did a morning show. When was the last time you were doing regular kind of late night stuff, post game shows? Was that ever a regular thing on your agenda there? Or?
Yeah, well, I mean, so when I moved to Toronto to help launch TSN 1050, in April of 2011, I had done the Senators postgame show on what was then Team 1200 for like five or six seasons with Eastwood.
Right.
And actually that final year, 2010 into 2011, the 2010-11 year, I did the pre-intermissions and post. I did the whole shebang.
Hmm.
So I was like really covovered the sport and whatever. So my first gig at TSN 1050 was an evening show with Jim Taddy.
Right.
Which we called Game Night.
Yeah.
And that was kind of,
yes, guy.
Taddy's awesome, but yes, guy. but like I grew up like you, Matt, like we watched Jim Taddy.
Yeah. 100%.
So I remember
Mark Hebscher, Jim Taddy, Sportsline.
When I heard Taddy was my co-host, I'm like, to challenge Tatman if I disagree with him. And that all worked out great because we got along well. But what I did, because we worked in the evenings, was I got myself a press pass and I went down to the Leafs practice facility on Kipling Avenue during the season, and I watched them skate, and I was in the locker room and I would talk to players like, God, Ben Scrivens and Jonas Gustafsson. And
sure. The glory days.
Nickname my cousin because he spells his last name like I do correctly. You know, by the way, that Kansas City Royals closer, James MacArthur,
mm-hmm,
is MC, which is too bad because if it was MAC, that's my dad. James McCarthy.
Okay.
But that's total aside.
You would have had to buy a Royals jersey.
I would have had to have done that. Yes. So anyway, my point is that was the last time I did late nights. It wasn't a post-game show because 640 still had the Leafs rights back then.
Right.
But I was around the team and we did some stuff at the arena once we took the rights along with Sportsnet 590 The Fan and we split them. Mm-hmm. So it's more than a decade now, Matt, since I've done any of that, but it was in Toronto, not in Ottawa, where I more recently did it. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you making the exception to the rule here tonight. Let's move on to the Jays. I do want to ask you briefly, did you have a chance to get a look at the line on Alek Manoah? He pitched again on Wednesday night down in Buffalo. He'd had a good step forward his last start. Look, it's hard when you're just looking at the line, but I didn't see the game, obviously, but doesn't look like there was this looks like a step back. I don't know if you spoke to anybody, if you had a look at it or not, but man, he's struggling down there a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and for me, it's not, well, his fastball's hitting 96.
Right.
Okay.
So what was it? Fastball, it was 6 earned runs over 3 innings pitched, I believe, is what we saw, yeah.
So, but like, it's like I'm a little past, oh, good, the velocity's there, call him up.
Yeah, no.
You know, it's just, for me, it remains, and he's still so young, but mm-hmm. it remains one of the wilder career arcs that we've ever experienced. In professional sports,
yeah.
And I'm not saying somebody in LA would answer the same as you and me because they might have never heard of Alek Manoah, but certainly in my experience, to reach the heights that he did in 2022,
a Cy Young candidate, a playoff starter, an opening day starter,
right.
And now
you know
can't get like, it going at all.
It is tough. And, you know, they've got to really be sure that they're, and I imagine they are, but they've got to really be sure about what they want to do and what the plan is with and for Yariel Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Because he didn't pitch much last year. And it would make life a lot easier for them if Manoah could just lock it in.
Yeah.
But we're not seeing it. And I'm not holding my breath because I need a new batch of oxygen in my lungs, Matt. I've been holding it in for a while now, and it's a little difficult. So yeah, it's a tough look for him, and just so the whole thing is just so weird. It's kind of inexplicable, and in a way, it is. It is certainly sad.
Yeah.
I feel
for the guy for sure.
Well, yeah, but I feel for the guy. I feel for the team.
Yep.
Because, I mean, they didn't start him on opening day last year because they weren't counting on him to make 30 starts. And I mean, goodness, if he repeated his 2022 numbers, that would have really been something. But even a slight bit of regression, he's still one of the top pitchers in the American League.
Sure.
They didn't have him falling off a cliff. I don't know. I honestly don't have any, you know, insight beyond what I'm offering here at this point. I just think it's totally confounding. And, you know, I'm trying to come up with names like Dontrell Willis.
The D-Train. Nice.
The D-Train. But he... You know, he won the World Series with the Marlins in 03 and was still good enough that, or maybe the Marlins sort of forced the Tigers to, hey, you want Miguel Cabrera, then you got to take this guy too.
Right.
But he still was a guy for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to come up with comparisons. I really.
Well, and we all have like a little closer to home. you want to draw the Halliday thing, right? Like, he came up, and then he had to go all the way back down and rebuild, but then he came up and was awesome. And so we, like, that's the best case scenario that we're all just like,
yeah,
he's not, but it's not that. It's just not that. It's,
yeah, and the thing there, like, the thing with Halliday is, to me, that was a complete reconstruction of the delivery. Like, if you, I think it's on YouTube, if you go back to, like, type something in, like, Roy Halliday almost no hitter, and Halliday made a start as a 20-year-old or 21-year-old,
like, last week of the season, right? Like,
in against the Detroit Tigers, yeah, in late September of 98 at the then Sky Dome, and it'll always be Sky Dome to me. Yeah. And I think Bobby Higginson broke it up in the ninth inning with a home run. But watch, because I think there's clips of it on YouTube. Watch Halliday. You won't recognize that it's Roy, because he is throwing the ball straight over the top. That three quarters arm slot that he used as he became one of the greatest pitchers of his generation didn't exist yet.
Right.
And so I don't think that what the Blue Jays are doing with Manoah is a comprehensive overhaul of the delivery, but it is mind-boggling that he's fallen off a cliff like this and he can't get AAA hitters out consistently.
Well, I know you go, you know, you and Richard Griffin on the Exit Philosophy podcast, available at youtube.com/exitphilosophy or on whatever podcast app you're listening to this on. You guys go much deeper in depth on a lot of Blue Jay stuff. I want to hand it to you. Like, what's standing out to you right now as the Jays have just dropped a second of three games to the Kansas City Royals? One more to go. This is a four-game set. A lot of people talking about Vlad. While Leafs Twitter was melting down on Wednesday night, Jay's Twitter didn't seem a whole lot healthier. I saw one that said, "I don't think anyone will mind if Bo and Vlad are batting 6 and 7 tomorrow." I sort of thought, you know, it was frustrating. It's not an exciting way to win, but they had won 4 series in a row coming into this one. Now you stumble over Kansas City, people get all frustrated again. Baseball's a long season, but are you optimistic about this group? Are you pessimistic about this group? What do you think of Vlad? Like, where do you want to take us here, Scotty?
Okay, so you can determine whether I am optimistic or pessimistic when I give you this response. And then that will force you, Matt, in your somewhat, not totally, but somewhat inebriated state, to recollect. And I know you take copious notes when I'm on your show, and you can look back and see what it is that I said.
Sure.
But this team right now, with the exception of the underperformance of Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., is exactly what I thought it would be.
Should it's we crown a team. Their asses? They are who we thought they were.
And well, but we're not letting them off the hook. we're not letting them off the hook. You know, somebody, there needs to be at least a handful of people who don't let this front office off the hook. But look, they're 13-12, and correct me if I'm missing a game or two on that, but I think they're 13
I think that's right, yeah.
And 12 after the loss to the Royals on Wednesday night. And that's when we're talking, they got the day game, getaway day game in Kansas City to complete the series tomorrow. So they could still salvage a split, although they've got to try and do some damage against a tough lefty in Cole Reagans. At least they got Berríos going, who, by the way, is an early season, and it is early season, but we can only go by the amount of time that we've had pass. Jose Berríos is my American League Cy Young Award winner for the first month of the season. Now he's got to do it for another 4.5-5 months, but
just like Chapman was our MVP after 1 month of the season last
year. Yeah, but Berríos,
I'm with you. I'm just being an asshole.
I know. I'm higher on Berríos than
so am I. I like Berríos.
Chapman.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they can't hit, and they can pitch. And
sure
the bullpen's got to get itself organized, but you're getting Swanson back after a ridiculously difficult offseason where he had a near tragedy with his little boy. And then some, you know, physical ailments that come off of that, which is totally understandable. He's still trying to find his groove. Romano's getting back into the groove. Jimmy Garcia, I mean, if he keeps adding miles per hour to his fastball, he'll be throwing 115 by September. I mean, he and it's the movement, man. Like, he is unhittable. So I'm confident in the pitching staff, but I think we always were. You know, Bo Bichette's got to turn it around, and we're all going to wake up on October the 1st, and he's going to have 190 to 205 hits and probably lead the league in hits. My question is going to be, is he going to be more consistent like he was in 2023, or is he going to get hot for the final 6 weeks of the season like he did in 2022 and make everybody forget that the first 4.5 months he had an on base of about 300,
right?
Which isn't good enough.
Nope.
Especially when you're hitting two or three in the order. So there's that. Vlad, you know, I don't know what to tell you about that.
It's turning, man. The crowd's turning on him.
And, you know, we're all different. So it's hard to just sit here and say, well, he's this or he's that. And sometimes it's hard to hammer a person if they are just being who they are.
Yeah.
And you and I can't sit here and say, well, this is who Vladdy is. We don't know the man. I mean, I met him a handful of times in scrums and a couple of, you know, sort of head nods when I was around the team in 2019 when he just came up. He was a young kid. I mean, I don't know him. I haven't covered him every day. So I can't comment on the who of the person. But there's a focus issue. The batting eye that was so celebrated when he was signed as a teenager and that he, you know, displayed. You remember he walked that game off at Olympic Stadium in,
that was incredible.
What was it, 2018? Yeah. But the home run walked it off.
Yeah.
I think it was against the Cardinals. They beat him 1-0.
Yep.
But it was the pitch before the home run. It was a 2-2 slider just off the plate outside and just below the knees. And he's like 19 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he just took that pitch.
Yeah.
I know it's an exhibition game.
At it. Yeah.
I know it's an exhibition game, and I know the Cardinals pitcher is probably somebody we certainly can't remember now and probably have never heard from since.
Right.
I don't care. It was remarkable discipline. That's all come away now.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a pitch early in tonight's game, and we're talking on Wednesday, April the 24th. There was a pitch early in tonight's game. It was a fastball from Marsh, the starting pitcher for the Royals, right-hander, that kind of ran in. So it's on the plate, but it had some, you know, movement to the inner half of the plate coming in toward Vladdy's bat. Yeah. And I'm like, and he fouled it off.
That's your pitch, man.
He fouled it off to the first base side. And I'm like, where?
Yeah.
I'm not saying you're driving that ball 410 feet, but I mean, that is usually a 112 mile per hour piss rocket.
Yeah.
Off his bat that, you know, might blow through the third baseman's glove if it's right to that guy on a line.
Yeah. Vladdy's the only guy having stuff blow through his glove at this point.
Or just straight up whiff. So is there a focus issue? Is there a confidence issue? I've wondered before, and this was last year, and I think even late into 2022, I'm like, is he thinking about the long-term contract and the fact it hasn't happened yet? And some guys who have the same amount of service time or even less service time than him have locked in long-term deals, and he's pressing because he feels like he's got to, you know, he's got to be that guy to get the years and dollars he wants. Did 2021 and the season he had blow all of our expectations out of the water and make everything henceforth unrealistic? I don't know the answers to any of those questions, but I can tell you this team is not a very good offensive team, and it cannot withstand over 6 months. Bichette and Guerrero not doing their jobs. And so we'll trust that they will come around. Dalton Varsho starting to look a bit like a guy is a good thing, mm-hmm. but 14 days is not six months.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's just see. I'm not saying he can't, and I'm also not saying he needs to have a 1200 OPS the rest of the season like he has had over the last 2 weeks. What we need to see from him is that he settles in to sort of a consistent groove where he's a contributor. And then after that, you know, Alejandro Kirk's got to get going. Danny Jansen's working back into form. He needs to get going. I'm tired of talking about George Springer. I know he hit a home run tonight, and I know
his
he had a couple of hits
are way down, right? Like,
well, and his a couple of hits in last night's game. I think they were Tuesday night's game. They were singles.
Yeah.
There's not been a lot of exit velocity off the bat. I just don't see the same player. And you've heard me rag on about that. When you sign a guy at Springer's age to a contract like they did, and I was for it at the time, and I think so was everybody else, but you really need to have team success in the first half of a deal like that, because once it gets to 34, 35, 36 years old, once the injuries start to add up mm-hmm. and the wear and tear starts to add up and all of that stuff, he's just not quite the same guy. And I don't know why he's leading off. And then I broached that with a couple of people and they say, well, who would you put in? Who's the alternative? And I'm like, that's part of the problem.
Yeah. That was something management should have probably considered through the offseason.
The fact that there isn't an obvious alternative tells you there isn't a lot of offense on this team. Now, I can give you answers. Like if Kevin Biggio is playing,
takes
he
a
may
lot of
pitch,
like sees a lot of pitches.
Yeah.
I've heard
then
worse options.
I mean, you would at least, even if he takes a dick shot fastball 94 miles an hour down the plate for a called third strike on a full count, you go, what the hell are you looking at, Kevin? At least, you know, it's probably 7-8 pitches yes. into the at bat,
yeah.
and that's given Vlad, if he's paying attention, and Bo the opportunity to see the starting pitcher's repertoire that night, as opposed to George Springer flailing at an off-speed pitch down and away, or a breaking ball down and away, and pulling a lame ground ball to the shortstop who charges in and fires it to first, and Springer's out by 10 feet. It's a one pitch at bat. It's like, well, geez, George, you know, thanks for coming out.
Didn't help anybody.
You know, so
there, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, they're 13-12. That's fine. It's not good. It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's mediocre.
Rich Griffin pointed out on our podcast that dropped on Monday and is up at youtube.com/exitphilosophy, the latest episode, if you want to look at us while we talk. He mentioned, you know, the Jays have actually been quite fortunate. I'm going to forget some of the names, but like, you know, there was no Verlander when they played Houston, and there was no Garrett Cole when they played New York, mm-hmm. and McClanahan and Rasmussen are hurt for the Rays. There was no either of them in the opening series. And so the way that the chips have kind of fallen, although they did get the Mariners, they got Castillo, they got the top Gilbert, they got the top Mariners pitchers. But, you know, for most of these series, Griff was pointing out, like, they aren't getting the cream of the crop. They, you know, Royals, you're getting four of their five starters, and you got Reagan's tomorrow, so you're getting their best. But, like, in a lot of cases, they kind of missed some of that, so maybe that's helped them a bit. But you see that they're not scoring enough runs, and you see that they're winning a lot of close games. And you've got to – I don't see where the offense is – it's the same stuff, Matt. Like, there's no – this is who they are. You know, people are like, well, they're not playing well. Actually, they won four consecutive series. They're down 2 out of 3 to Kansas City with a chance to get the split tomorrow in game four.
Yeah.
But, like, what did you – so they're not 19-6, so you're pissed? Like, they're not that good. You know, Gausman is still a month behind.
Well, he's somebody I wanted to ask you about. And, you know, as we move off of, you know, Guerrero in the offense a little bit, I do want to shout out a good friend of the show, a guy who's made a bunch of time for this show, Andrew Stoughton, a guy I'm sure you're familiar with there, Scott.
Yeah, and, of course.
His work is at thebatflip.ca. We'll link to that as well in the show notes. But he put out a really interesting piece on Wednesday, and he wasn't, look, don't get crazy on me, don't get crazy on him, good listener, but he was just pointing out the similarities in Vladdy and Bryce Harper, right? Kind of coming up, similar ages, going to be the next big thing. And then you have that one big breakout year, and then it kind of cools off for a little bit. And then Bryce Harper has turned it around, and he's sort of ebbed and flowed a little bit, but he has been elite, you know, basically after a year or two, you know, sort of from that one big. So that's still on the table for Vlad.
Sure.
And I would send people to Stoughton's work. Like I said, we'll link that in the show notes, because again, he's not saying, don't worry, this is going to be the exact path Vlad is on, but he's just saying, hey, baseball's weird. Sometimes this stuff's still on the table, right? And so I just want to put that out there, because Stoughton's been very good to the show as well here over the last 1,300 episodes or so. But I do want to ask you, you mentioned Kevin Gausman, and maybe the last thing before we wrap this up would be on him, because he's sort of, I don't know, up and down maybe is unfair. He's had some moments where he hasn't looked like himself, but his spring wasn't a standard spring, right? He had to be shut down, and he was dealing with some things, and there was some talk that maybe he wouldn't start the regular season on the big league roster. Maybe he'd need an extra start or two. He said, no, like, get me in there, game five, whatever it was, and you know, he's working through it. Are you at all worried about Gausman, or does this just look like a guy who didn't have a spring and is sort of doing his spring stuff now and is good enough to kind of hang while he's working through it?
That's what we're all crossing our fingers for.
Right.
Those of us who want this team to do well. Mm-hmm. I am wholly confident, Matt, in 2024 that if Kevin Gausman even uttered a word, it hurts a little bit.
Right.
Or it's, you know, it's a little sore beyond what I'm used to the day after I pitch, or what, they'd be all over it.
Right.
And I also think, you know, things are so advanced now that I don't think athletes can really hide anything from their teams. You know, they can tell by the way the ball's coming out of your hand whether you're feeling something or something's a little off.
Spin rates and things like that. They know you're not right.
Yeah, and they're filming every pitch in side sessions down in the bullpen in between starts. If your arm angle is like a 1 degree, one degree is probably a lot, but I don't know what the hell, but like it might be a half a degree.
Sure.
But if it's just a little off, that might tip them off to something, and then the next thing you know, you're going for a test or whatever. So the fact that he's out there tells me that he's healthy enough to be out there. And, you know, he's running up the pitch count right now. Sometimes he's not getting the depth on that that splitter. You know, the fastball velocity is okay-ish. Let's talk about this again in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, if it's still a problem.
Yeah.
Because if it's still a problem, then
you got big.
You know,
it's a big.
Maybe it's a down year. Let me take you back to a different time. And my all-time favorite Blue Jays pitcher, Dave Steeb. Okay, so I was a little kid. I
thought it was going to be Gustavo Chacin.
He's my second.
Did you ever have the cologne? Anything? No.
No.
That was a thing. Eau de Chacin.
Certainly was Eau de Chacin. Unfortunately, most of the time when he was on the mound, it was
Eau de Toilette.
Yeah. By the way, we need to have a conversation about that sometime. You walk into the perfume or the cologne sections, it's all this Eau de Toilette. How the fuck is that supposed to be appealing? Like, you know, Although toilettes probably mean something different in a different language, but you know,
none of the ones anyway. I know.
Yeah, we're digressing. better stop this, or we'll flush the segment. But so Gosman, and Dave Steeb.
Right.
Dave Steeb. Now this is back when guys threw like 250 innings a year, but Dave Steeb in 1985 threw his usual go to baseball reference just to. But it was 230, 235, 240, 250. It was somewhere in there, regular season innings. And then in the American League Championship Series, and in 1985, that was the year that the Championship Series moved from the best of five to the best of seven. So Blue Jays fans, remember that. We were up 3-1 against the Royals. We'd have beaten them in 1984 in a best of five, 3-1. But it moved to best of five. Jays had a 3-1 series lead. Steeb started games 1, 4, and 7. And Dave Steeb didn't want you to ever take the ball out of his hand, but he was looking to the dugout late in his start in game 7. Looking to Bobby Cox like he had nothing left.
Right.
Right? Fast forward to 1986, go to Baseball Reference. Check Dave Steeb's win-loss record. That mattered more back in those days.
Sure.
You know, starting pitcher, check the ERA. Check the FIP, check the walks per nine, check the hits allowed, all of it. 1986 was a bad year for Dave Steeb, just a straight up bad year. And so, it isn't a comparison I'm making out of any like direct knowledge. I'm just saying, even great pitchers struggle sometimes, and sometimes they struggle for calendar seasons.
Right.
And Gosman really didn't have a spring. And so if you consider April to be his March, mm-hmm. except the games count. And so we're really, this isn't a time where Kevin Cohen can go out and say, well, I'm working on a third pitch
right.
to mess with guys. And I'm going to focus on that today. Oh, I got my bell rung. I gave up 7 runs and 2 in a third innings in Bradenton against the Pirates. Well, we notice it more when it doesn't go so well against the Rays or the whoever's, the Yankees, whatever.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, does he catch up? Now, theoretically, he should. But if this has just been such a wonky couple of months because he's out of that routine and the buildup that he's used to and kind of getting into the season in a groove, got to hope he recovers. But you know, it's possible that this just isn't going to be his best season.
It's funny, Scotty, because I reference from time to time, and because I think in this element, it's absolutely correct. But for whatever reason, when I bring up Jeff Blair on this show, I get very, very mixed reactions in our social media. But Jeff has said numerous times, and this is something that I absolutely think is correct. He goes, when you sign a free agent pitcher to a 5-year contract, you should assume 1 year, it's going to be a pretty bad year. You don't know when it's going to come, but he's going to have a down year. That's just sort of what happens. 1 year, good chance he's going to be injured. He's going to have, you know, the way the demands on pitchers right now. You know, and sometimes you escape it. It's not always the way that it comes down. But 1 year he's going to be hurt. 1 year he's not going to be very good. And the other 3, you're just hoping that he gives you everything you expect him to give. And so, look, we don't know. It's too early to say what this year is going to be for Kevin Gosman. But as you suggest, Scotty, it just could be that, you know, he didn't have the spring he wanted. It's going to be tough to ramp up now mid-season. Maybe this just isn't going to be, you know, an elite Kevin right. Gosman year. That's on the table.
Right. And so here's what it needs to be. It needs to be, and he needs to be healthy. I mean, every player needs sure. to be healthy. That it, you don't want injuries. But if he's out there and he gives you 30 plus starts, okay, maybe the ERA is 4 instead of 3.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he throws 170 innings instead of 195, or whatever the case may be. I don't like the whole whisper for effect thing on radio shows or podcasts, but I'm just going to let you in on something. You know what can help a pitcher who's struggling sometimes, mm-hmm. Matt?
Especially if his ERA is up just a little?
runs.
Yeah, yeah. Runs help.
Runs help. Runs help.
Somebody score for this guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe, like, maybe he goes 5 1/3 and he gives up 4 earned and you're leading 6-4 and the bullpen comes in and shuts it down and everybody goes home happy.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of you lose 4-2 because you can't hit, you know, but it gets back to the
speaking of things that are on the table. Yeah.
You know, so but like, I mean, Barrios and Kikuchi, man, are the heroes of the early part of this season. And Varsho offensively, and like he got off to a slow start on that opening road trip.
Yep.
And now he's been in Fuego. And it's been huge. And it's like, it's not just been like, oh, you know, he went 3-4 with a couple of doubles. He's hit 3-run home runs in moments where they needed it. Well, you always need a 3-run home run, but you got to have two guys on base for that to happen. But like, you know, a 3-run home run turns a 1-run deficit into a 2-run lead, or it turns a 2-run deficit into a 1-run lead. Or if you hit it in the first inning, you're up 3. And you're feeling pretty good, you know, like, so he's had some big bombs for this team and they've been badly needed, especially with the top third of the order just being crappy so far. And oh, so my three heroes, well, Jimmy Garcia, too. I love Jimmy Garcia. I'm so happy he's pitching well. And,
yeah.
You know, and I always tend towards, well, what does this all mean? And I hope everything's going to be okay. Because all these pitchers' injuries, I watched that Sunday night baseball game in L.A., not Sunday night, but the week before, where the Padres and Dodgers played. Right. And they did, like, the whole fifth inning on pitchers' injuries. And they had Tyler Glasnow, who did not pitch for the Dodgers that night, in the dugout. He did a half an inning with the broadcast crew. And, of course, he's coming off Tommy John.
Yeah.
And they were theorizing and talking about injuries and, you know, the focus on velocity and the focus on spin rate and all of this stuff. And I'm thinking, man, Jimmy Garcia has never thrown the ball harder and the movement is unbelievable. And I'm not an expert. So what is he doing to ramp it up both from a velocity perspective and a movement perspective? He's always had movement, but this movement's elite. And maybe that's because it's tied to just the speed of the pitches. I'm thinking like, man, I hope that arm holds up for 6 months.
That's the part.
I'm always scared of something, Matt.
Yeah.
I live in fear, buddy. I live in fear. But my four heroes so far are Barrios, Kikuchi, Varsho, and Garcia. And if you had told me 2 years ago that in 2024 Barrios and Kikuchi
hanging our hopes.
would be heroes, I'd be like, nah.
You say Kikuchi's a 71-win season.
You say Kikuchi, you know, is on the DFA train if it don't get better next year in 2023. And then it did.
Yes, it did.
And now he's having another very, you know, I think he's better now than he was last year. I thought people were over. I thought people, he had a good year last year. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not taking anything away from that, but like, I felt like last year people were like, well, he actually looks like some semblance of a pitcher, so he's good now. I'm like, well, yeah, but if you're going to compare him to 2022, I mean, you couldn't limbo under that bar. So like, but now he's like, he's a guy who, when it's his day to pitch, I'm like, the Jays can win tonight.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you want. There's no metric for that. There's no data for that. It's like, who's pitching tonight? So-and-so. Jays can win tonight. Who's pitching tonight?
Well, so-and-so. It's like when you're sitting there. I grew up like you know, in the GTA, although a little bit later on. So I was buying my tickets online, and you could map out. Okay. It had, when you would click on that game, projected starters. And so you could sort of choose to buy your tickets based on that. Oh, no, I'm not going for the Ted Lilly game, right? Like, I'll wait for whatever else is coming.
You know what? I got to say, in the defense of Ted Lilly, and as a Cubs fan,
yes,
I liked, there was a period of time there, you know, both in Toronto and then when he was a Cub. Ted Lilly's all right.
He was all right.
I like Ted Lilly. But you're right.
It was an unnecessary drive-by.
You wanted to go to the Roy Halladay game.
Of course
game.
I did, yes.
You know, that's the point you're making. You're not besmirching my guy, Ted Lilly. Yeah.
Scotty, I appreciate you doing this, man. I can tell you've been sitting back in the driveway there for a bit. The audio has indicated as such. If you'll allow me just a second to navel gaze on 1,300 episodes of this podcast, it's been nonsense from start to finish. And I look back to the fall of 2017. That is the week that the Grey Cup is here in Ottawa. It's Argonauts and Stampeders. And I grew up like you in the GTA. I was an Argos guy, and I went to a bunch of playoff games at the Dome, and it was fun, Scotty. It was fun to go to Argo playoff games at the Dome. Wasn't fun to go to regular season games at the Dome, but they could fill it for a playoff game. And so I'm up here. This is where my life is now. This is where we've started the show. And it's just me and Rob. It's a guy named Nate Sager, who was writing for Yahoo Sports at the time, was putting in time. It's Canadian Paralympian Amy Burke, who's putting in time here. Like, we're building something, but it's taking a long time. And the Grey Cup rolls into town, and all of a sudden there's some people here. And one of the first people who comes on is AJ Jakubek. He does it remotely at the time because he's obviously very busy as a Red Blacks play-by-play guy. So he comes on remotely on Tuesday night. On the Monday night, it had been Andy Nita from the Nita Beer Company, who is someone who has gone on to do all kinds of stuff for this show, mainly in product. And that's all we're really asking for out of the Nita Beer Company when they're doing things for us. And then on the Friday night, you're here in town. I send you a message out of nowhere. Scotty, you don't know me at all. I don't know you at all. I just sent a message. Hey, I see you're here in town. And you tell me right up front, hey, not a CFL guy. I'm here because we're doing Radio Row. It's Grey Cup week in Ottawa. But if that's cool with you, if you want to talk some baseball, if you want to have somebody in, and you were one of those first guys, you were actually the first mainstream media person who came into the studio in person. Like I said, AJ did it the night before you or two nights before you, but remotely, you were the first one to come in person. We get halfway through that show, and I asked you something, and you were like, well, we can talk about that. I think it was Shohei Ohtani. In winter 2017, we were, where's he going? What's this guy all about?
Right. Okay.
And I ask you about him, and you're like, well, we can get into that, but I didn't come out here for just one beer. Can we go get another one? Can we take a break? And so we take a break there. We go and we grab some Nita product that they had left for us. We reconvene back in the studio at that point. And I'll never forget, man, for whatever reason, this phrase has just stuck with me. You know, you stuck around for a little while. You were going down afterwards for a Bell Media or just a media person get together somewhere in the Byward Market, right? All these media people are in town, so you knew people. You were going to go do that, and you stayed late to do the show with us. And as you're getting your shoes on and you go to leave, and I said to you one last time before you're getting ready to head out the door, I said, Scotty, man, I really appreciate this. Thank you for, you know, coming and contributing something to. Something you really had no reason to do other than just being a good guy. And as you shook my hand, you go, hey, we're all just trying to do our shit. And it's not particularly articulate, Scotty. It's not like poetic, but I remember going, this is a good guy, right? Like this is one of those people. Everyone's out here just trying to build. Everyone's just trying to do their thing and get ahead a little bit. And that week, I look back on fondly all the time as a stepping stone for this show. We took advantage of the fact that the Grey Cup was here in town and that there was going to be a lot of people here. But you came in, you spent a couple hours with us, and that phrase just before you made your exit, hey, we're all just out here trying to do our shit, has stuck with me 1,300 episodes later, man. Thank you so much for being such an awesome friend of the show, buddy. It's been great.
Well, and I thank you for inviting me back then, and I remember how much I enjoyed meeting you and doing the show with you guys that night, and obviously don't remember exactly your apartment.
These are bigger moments to me than...
Don't remember your apartment, because when I walked in to Surprise Versage a month ago, I said, hey, well, this is one hell of a studio, man. And then I was like in your living room. I'm like, yeah, because we did it here 2 years, or right. 5, 6 years. And you're like, actually, I moved 2 floors down from where... I'm like, okay, well, that explains a few things. All right, so I was a little off, but I mean, same building. Yeah. We're all just trying to do our shit. And, you know, like I have one rule now And, you know, you've kind of been on this ride with me, and we stay in touch via text. And when we're, you know, it's not just about doing the pod, but.
And when I'm not up my own ass on a Leaf playoff game.
Oh, don't worry about that, man. If you try and text me during a 49ers game and that, plus if they don't win, I need like 6 days.
Yeah. I'm going to go sulk for a little.
Volcano. Yeah. I'm like, if the lava pops up, I'd rather be dead anyway, because the 49ers lost in week 8. But if it doesn't, then that's a sign that there's reason to go on to week 9 and put myself through it again. But yeah, so for me, it's important to have fun. And I've been open with you on your show about how, for whatever reason or reasons, it stopped being fun for me, which is why I chose to make a significant pivot in my life. Mm-hmm. But I love coming on Tall Can and shooting the shit. And I love the informality of it, where we can just talk about whatever. And so it keeps me kind of close to something I used to do. But it's done in a format where we don't have to worry about a commercial in 8 minutes and then a 5 minute stop set. It's just a conversation, you know. It's nostalgia for me when you get Versage involved and and whoever else, and
Ackie,
and I really like, you know, I keep tabs on you, and I, you know, I download the Versage episodes all the time, and I've caught some of the other stuff you've done. I just really like, you know, from Creech, you know, Steve Bunda's not a guy that I ever crossed paths with. Our times at 1200 just never were at the same time, but, you know, obviously know of him. Mm-hmm. and know that people I know speak very highly of him.
Right.
And to know that Steve Lloyd and AJ and all these people come on with you, you know, it's kind of cool that way. You've got a thing going here, and I really hope it continues to grow for you. And I'm happy to be a part of it. And, you know, I got to say, like, we're all just trying to do our shit. And as I look at the calendar, man, I'm almost at an age now where I'm going to have to eat prunes in the morning just to take a shit. Hey, you know, I mean, but like, whatever that is, right? Yeah. Whatever that is you do for a living, just remember, you got to enjoy it, because then it's really a grind if you don't. So, remember, if you're feeling disempowered, you do have the ability to make a change. That doesn't necessarily mean you can quit the job you currently have, but it doesn't mean you can't go looking for something that you love a little bit, that you think you'd love a little bit more. And then when you do find it, you can move on and stuff like that. So don't disempower yourself. Enjoy what you do. And I certainly enjoy coming on this show.
Well, I appreciate it, man, because we've certainly enjoyed having you on here and having your takes. And you know, we've done the sports thing. We've talked about that a bunch of times, but your perspective on a bunch of other topics has been very invaluable to a lot of us here. So that's been great. And it's kind of cool as I sit here. Sometimes it's the way things play out. Sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you can kind of make your own luck. As we celebrate 1300 episodes here, having you on today and then jumping on with AJ on 1200, you know, it all kind of circles back to that Grey Cup 2017 week in my mind, right? We all look at these things through our own lens, where you made the time, he made the time, and on the day that we release episode 1300, I'm going to get to talk to both you guys. So I'm pretty pumped about all of that. So thank you so much for doing it, buddy. I appreciate it.
You bet. And we'll do it again very soon.
100%. That's where we'll wrap this one up. That is episode 1300 of Tall Can Audio. Thank you so much for listening to this one, to any of them, to all of them. I don't know how many of you have been here for all 1300. Probably just my mom. Maybe that's the only one. And really, I wouldn't blame her if she passed on a couple as well. So Scott MacArthur is on the Exit Philosophy podcast. Highly recommend. Scotty Mack and Rich Griffin. Tons of perspective there, all kinds of good stuff. It is at youtube.com/exitphilosophy or on whatever podcast app you're listening to this on. You can find them as well.
And we will make sure the links to that are in the show notes. For Scott MacArthur, my name is Matt Robinson. For episode 1300 of Tall Can Audio, we'll see you next time.
The hell is that?
Number one bullshit. Oh, number one bullshit.
Why are you so pissy?